Hello, everybody. We are honored to talk about how to look at food access amongst Indian country. And so I want to begin by getting us a little bit into the food movement and ask anybody who's ever lived or worked on one of our 500 American Indian communities to rise. All right. I'll expect the tough questions or comments from you guys. So we have four. You can stay standing. And then any of you guys who have worked in rural settings, please stand. Okay, we're getting there. All right. And then how many of you guys know that American Indian children have the highest rates of childhood obesity? All right, we're getting there. And then finally, how many of you know the First Lady did a special initiative called Let's Move in Indian Country to address some of these issues? All right, we're getting there. I thought I'd get all of you guys moving, but maybe you're not active right now. But like I said, we are honored to share our tribal perspective on how to look at food access among Indian country. When we were funded back in 2008, Lauren Klein confirmed to me the other night that we are still the first and probably the only healthy eating research grant that is exclusively looking at American Indian settings. So we're very excited about that. And all this was made possible through partnerships with 7 tribes in North Carolina. The expertise, the energy, the experience of a multidisciplinary team is essential to trying to do something of this nature and bringing together spatial, qualitative, American Indian, community-based research, policy, all these type of experiences together. So we would not be where we are today if I didn't have this team. Briefly, we relied a lot on the ecological model for community nutrition environments to explain to the tribes what we were doing and why we were doing it. But we were also modifying this a bit because we wanted to look particularly at how tribal leaders can modify their environment and their tribal policies as well. So we relied a lot on political science and business to kind of help us understand how can we change and not just be influenced by things around us. Per suggestion of our key partners, the North Carolina Commission of Indian Affairs and the North Carolina American Indian Health Board, we started this process with the 7 tribes using modified talking circles. We have a nice paper that kind of describes this process. And really, I just want to highlight for today's presentation that it was essential to start off with a culturally appropriate way to begin this conversation. And really, it just began a dialogue of how we look and how we improve the food environment in these communities. So the 7 participating tribes, just to give you a sense, there are American Indians still on the east. This is the largest population of American Indians east of the Mississippi. And we have 7 state-recognized tribes in North Carolina that we worked with. And within about 10 months, we were able to populate these environments. These are called state-recognized tribal statistical areas, with direct observations and then 5 sources of secondary data to describe what the food environments look in these areas. We used the state-designated tribal statistical areas from the 2010 census, and we did ground truthing, so we drive within the state-designated area. You'll see Lumbee is really huge. It was, in terms of miles, that's how I talk, 6,000 miles. So you'll notice that there's only food outlets really populated in 2 areas. And that's Lumberton, which you'll see when you go down 95 and heading south, and then the heart of Lumbee, which is Pembroke. We did use secondary data to fill in what the food environment looks within all of Lumbee, and then within the surrounding communities of all these state-designated tribal statistical areas. So we hope within 3 papers to describe our methods and our findings for what an American Indian community looks like in terms of its food environment. And this, we were what we thought was the first paper to do this, but one just came out in JATA looking at the 21 tribes in the University of Washington. So there's not many studies that are really doing a rigorous assessment in Indian country, even though we know diet-related diseases are highest in that area, and a lot of these reservations are isolated. So I do encourage further work there. This is a quick and dirty table, just showing you what we directly observed in the communities. And I just want to highlight 3 tribes had no grocery stores within their state-designated area. The majority of these tribes are relying heavily on convenience stores, and there's a good mix of fast food and full-service restaurants. A lot of the full-service restaurants lean more towards smaller diners, but they do have full-service options, a lot of barbecues in North Carolina. So I just want to dive deep into one tribe for an example, and this is Halawa Saponi, and they are very rural. They are one of the tribes that doesn't have access to a grocery store, and through our direct observation, we were able to track Dollar General, which we found through qualitative research was a big thing. One community member explained she didn't know they had a food access issue until she realized how excited everybody was that they had a Dollar General coming to town. And you'll see just pictures of the smaller country stores and smaller diners that are in the area. And in our tribal areas, there was a lot of social gatherings, churches, or just community centers that also offered plate meals that were what we considered food sources in the community. And you'll see in the bottom corner here, this was where the strength of interoperability and work with community members helped. I missed that the first time through because it looked vacant to me at the time, but the second time through there was a man there. Again, I wouldn't know this was food, but at seasonal times he does feature farmers' produce. So a lot of people in the community know, you know, if corn's been picked, peas been pulled, they are there. So I want to use a little Google Earth just to kind of illustrate Halawa Saponi, how prominent the gas stations and the convenience stores without gas are in this community. So the gas station, obviously, you have a fuel pump, and then the country stores that just use milk and apples. Milk wasn't always available at a lot of these stores, but that's our way of noting that it was a convenience store or country store without gas. So this is predominantly what's available within this community. Using Google Street Maps, we can see that the tribal members are traveling about 27 minutes, or 27 miles, about 30 minutes, to get to their preferred grocery store, which is Walmart. Six of our communities had Walmart, and actually, surprisingly, the one tribe that had four or five grocery stores that's in their vicinity was really disappointed their Walmart wasn't a super Walmart. So that was, to them, an economic barrier that they didn't have, you know, this cost saving that they perceive that Walmart had for supermarkets. And this community member really shared some of the challenges that she faces in terms of feeding her children. And I'll read because it's kind of low. It says, it's easier for me to get a hold of a bag of chips than it is for me to get a hold of a bag of apples in this community. So this community is using tribally led ways to improve access to healthy eating in their community. They have a farmer's market they offer 2 days a week and also are breaking ground on a community garden. So they're really trying to figure out ways within their rural community to promote economic development for their farmers and also their artists within their community while also providing fresh fruits and vegetables. This greenhouse in the lower corner is a source of potential for community garden and growing in the community, but also illustrates some of the constraints the community has in building consensus over next steps around healthy eating strategies. So we did a rigorous assessment of all the food stores in these communities, but we were really happy that we simultaneously had qualitative data to really get the insights of what was going on in the food sources in this community. Ag was huge in this southern state, but a lot of the 40, 50-year-olds really expressed that they just kind of, it was a lost art, that they really, you know, took jobs and really didn't get the sense of how to tend their land and really garden, can, all those things. But the older generation, which is a key asset for a lot of these American Indian communities, really does try to preserve food and do indigenous foods and really try to share what they have with their families and their neighbors. The giving within this community and the sharing was really a prominent food source. And this is explained by one parent who explains how her mom still cans for her. And this is the vice chair of one of our participating tribes. A lot of the community changes that our tribes are looking to do, again, bring in that economic component. And they are using cultural tourism on their tribal land to really show tribal kids and also non-tribal community members what growing indigenous foods is, how it links into the culture, and how it could be a vital source of health and economy within the community. So Sean joyfully always shares how many children are shocked to learn that corn, beans, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, pumpkins are all crops planted in this area long before European contact. and they just think produce comes from stores. So a lot of us experience this, I think, in our work, but it's great to see tribes, you know, reconnecting their history and their culture with this idea too, and giving kids an outlet to learn about their culture and also healthy eating at the same time. So we used our spatial and qualitative data to build and develop tribally led approaches to improving access to healthy eating. I think this was critical to our partner, was this multidimensional approach, and really to have outcomes, to give data back to the tribes, and also not just bad news, but also ways they can kind of improve where they're at. And so the Tools for Healthy Tribes, it's available on our website that I'll have at the last slide, but really this was our way of kind of culminating the things we've learned throughout this process and give the tribal leaders something in their hands to kind of lead to the next steps. So we hope to, in about 3 papers, develop this process a little further and also the learning that went behind it. We reviewed over 500 tribal policies, resolutions, and constitutions to give us background and ideas for what we were doing. So we are fortunate we got funding through the KB Reynolds Foundation to continue the momentum we've been building in North Carolina, and we are expanding to the 4 urban Indian organizations. We didn't focus on them originally because there wasn't a concentrated area, but they are joining in our efforts to build capacity within North Carolina leaders to build community changes around healthy eating and active living. And it was really important. We were funded by Robert Wood Johnson Healthy Eating, and we had a focus on improving access to healthy eating. But physical activity and ways to improve access were equally as important amongst our tribes. And so we learned through the qualitative interviews and in informal ways that was a real big interest to them. So this is important that this grant opportunity addresses that, and a lot of the tribes, I'd say about 2 or 3 of them, are going to be putting their funding, about $12,000 over the next 2 years, into trails throughout their community. And that's also a point of bringing tourists onto their tribe to go through their land and get activity at the same time. So a big thing we're trying to do with the Healthy Native North Carolinians and how we're trying to use the evidence base that we've collected through the Robert Wood Johnson Grant is to really instill in the tribal leaders how to build partners within their local communities. So through this community academic partnership, help them kind of take the next step in building partners within their own community setting. So that's academic, churches, which is really big in North Carolina, or their native programs, their native youth programs. So tobacco has been very successful in North Carolina. So kind of learn from those lessons, learn from the youth drum circles, and to maximize that and bring in healthy eating and active living as well. And so powwow, you'll see in the toolkit, is another area where really we want to link the culture, economic, and health aspects into the community. So I am very indebted to a number of partners, participants, and advisors. This list captures very smallly the big contributions each of these individual people have had to this project and to continuing the momentum of this project. The website here, we try to list all of our resources as they come published. So there's our talking circle papers there and our toolkit. And hopefully within the next year, we'll have 4 to 6 more papers to add to the mix, both on the policy part and the spatial part. And please feel free to email or call. I think after Tools for Healthy Tribes came out, I fielded, I think, over 40 to 50 calls now of different tribes and people working with or wanting to work with tribes how to do it. So we talk food environment measurement, we talk just building the relationships, and we talk about describing tribally led policy. So feel free to email or call, or if you have a resource that you think that would be useful to this project, we really try to use lessons learned to disseminate on our website so our tribal leaders can use that during Healthy Native North Carolinians. So with that, I thank you all for attending this session. Thanks.